If you want to succeed as a farmer, you need healthy soil and clean water. And one strategy to conserve soil quality is intentionally growing strips of native prairie in the middle of farm fields. We'll talk about that today. Prairie strips, they're called, with Tim Youngquist. Tim is an Iowa farmer and an agricultural specialist in the Iowa State University Agronomy Department. Also a farmer, as I mentioned, liaison for the ISU program testing and promoting prairie strips amid row crops. Have you seen wide strips of prairie grass in the middle of a farm field? Do you wonder how prairie and crops can benefit one another? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Tim Youngquist, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for inviting me to be here.
You operate a farm in Iowa. Your family has owned that farm since 1871. How's farming today compared to when it was established 150 years ago?
That's a good question. Yeah, a lot has changed in that amount of time. You know, the land is still the same. So, you know, still walking on the same area, but, you know, equipment's gotten a lot bigger. We certainly grow a lot more corn and soybeans. Everything's intensified quite a bit more, but there's still a lot of things that are fairly similar.
Yeah, there are. And you have one thing that's maybe changed a bit is the conservation projects that you've employed and put in place on your farm.
Yeah, that's right. So, like I said, you know, having the farm and the family for over 150 years, it's been important to be good stewards of that land and try to help keep the soil in place, you know, filter the water, rainwater as it's coming, and then providing some habitat for, you know, grassland birds, for bumblebees, you know, monarch butterflies, all that kind of stuff to help kind of increase quality of life. So that's some things that, you know, we've got corn and soybean land, but then we've targeted areas, you know, that are environmentally sensitive or difficult to farm or lower producing, and put those in the native tallgrass prairie, which is kind of the basically here from all over the upper Midwest. Prairie would have been the dominant ground cover if you go back about 150, 200 years ago.
Yeah. I was thinking back to my time in high school, which is a long time ago. Now, I was taking vocational ag classes, and we were talking about strip cropping, contour farming, strip cropping back then. Maybe alfalfa or other types of plants, not prairie plants.
Yeah, so this is an idea, the prairie strips. It started at Iowa State University, and I'm kind of just representing that, you know, big interdisciplinary team. But an idea that started, you know, could we put something out in the corn and soybean fields, again, to keep that soil in place and filter water? Those are kind of the two main goals. And now, you know, here we are, 20 years later, and this is a nationwide conservation practice. So, you know, here in the upper Midwest, we've worked with a lot of the surrounding Midwest states and kind of done similar programs to make this available in places like Wisconsin and Illinois, Missouri, Indiana, you know, a lot of the states around here.
And if you know, just thinking about soil loss, I looked at the Wisconsin farm average loss. It depends on the soil and the everything and all the steepness and so forth. But it's somewhere between 1 and 5 tons per acre per year, what is a ton? About 22 cubic feet.
Well, and it's to build on that, you know, you think 5 tons, so you'd basically be driving a dump truck full for every 2 acres every year, but that's only the thickness of a dime. So in a year, you know, it's kind of this insidious problem where every time the rain falls, really every time the wind blows, it's moving around a little bit in those corn and soybean systems. But if you were to go outside your door tomorrow, you know, walk outside of your radio studio and the ground was a dime lower, you might not notice. So
yeah,
it's something that is easy to ignore, but you know, for somebody like my dad that's been farming for over 40 years, that gets to be a pretty big stack of dimes. And that's kind of what we're seeing over 150 years of farming.
I saw some, I looked online, I was looking for some research on this, and I actually found some Iowa research. You're probably familiar with it, but this was in 2024, the results were published, but in Iowa, someone had done the average topsoil depth, and at the start of the 20th century. And then they took it again at the start of the 21st century. And the soil depth in the 20th century averaged in Iowa 14 to 18 inches. And it was averaging in the start of the 20th century at 6 to 8 inches. So you're absolutely right. It's only a thin dime, but over the course of time, that's a huge amount.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, important to realize we have really productive soils here in the upper Midwest.
Yes.
Some of the best soils in the world. We are always going to be using them to produce something. But, you know, being aware that there are tools like prairie strips, cover crops, contour farming, you know, there's all kinds of things that are available to farmers. And I think part of my job, specifically at Iowa State, is just to try to get this information out in front of people, to let farmers and landowners know, hey, we're having some unintended consequences from all this production. And here are a laundry list of things. You know, whatever you're interested in, there's a place that you can kind of get started with doing conservation on your farm.
Yeah, absolutely. Lauren had shot an email to us. And this is interesting. She says, aren't these prairie strips in the middle of a field actually inviting insects only to be sprayed with crop chemicals? Are there studies showing this is not the case?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's one that I get all the time when we're out. And the neat thing about what we're doing at Iowa State is we're not just putting prairie out there. Ever since the initial, so this idea kind of started in 2004. We did our initial seedings, the initial plots in 2007, and those plots were heavily instrumented. So, you know, we put groundwater wells, we put hydrologic flumes to measure rainfall, you know, looked at ground beetles, looked at native bees, looked at honeybees, you know, just looking at all these different categories. And certainly putting broadleaf plants in a field where you're going to be spraying for broadleaves, or trying to invite insects into a field where you're spraying insecticide, you know, these things seem to be contrary to each other. The nice thing, or the kind of encouraging thing, is that the data doesn't really support that. You know, yes, I'm a farmer. I'm not trying to apologize for farming, but it is neat to think, and again, depends on the situation, but it is amazing that you can have corn and prairie right next to each other and still be able to not only not have a habitat sink where insects, monarchs are flying in, and then not being able to complete their life cycle, but you're actually producing more of specifically monarchs and things like that. Again, more study needs to be done. And, you know, we're talking strips and you're saying in the middle of the field, that's kind of true. I think look at it more broadly as we're looking for opportunities to put habitat out in a field. So bigger chunks, either on the edge of the field or even in the middle of the field, wider is always going to be better for wildlife. You know, they're just going to have more cover. They're going to have more pollen resources, more places to make a home. So again, prairiestrips.org is our website. We have dozens of peer-reviewed scientific publications. And I would encourage your listeners, if they are interested, to go and look at some of those papers that have been written on that topic to see, yes, there is some exposure to chemical to those creatures, but it's at really low levels or at sublethal levels. So to me, that's encouraging as a way that it's kind of going to work for the farmers and work for the environment.
Well, one thing that I thought about, and maybe I thought about it because I read about it someplace, but if you're planting, if you're attracting insects to this area, which you obviously are, you're also attracting beneficial, a lot of beneficial insects that actually could be helpful in terms of working against those that are not so beneficial.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think we have seen a lot of benefits for holding soil in place, filtering nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen, and then creating habitat for pollinators, creating habitat for grassland birds. But as far as, you know, beneficial insects, yes, there are ground beetles that are eating weed seeds. You know, there are predatory wasps. There are all these things. But my sense as someone who is not a scientist is that that's a little bit of a drop in the bucket compared to, compared to the weed pressure that you'd be feeling. So yes, you're having some of that, but not in a way that is going to be immediately noticeable. And I know one of my colleagues did a study again on ground beetles and found there was a lot higher diversity of beetles and there were more beetles in fields with prairie strips, but that they were ranging less far into the field. So they can kind of be fat and happy just in that prairie where they can get a lot of their needs met. And then they're not, it's not as though they're this army that's going into the field and eating bugs. I wish that it was, but
it's not the case. It's kind of
drop in the ocean.
Tim Youngquist, our guest today, an Iowa farmer, a strips farmer liaison, and an ag specialist in the Iowa State University Agronomy Department, talking about strip farming with native prairies. And I hope you'll join in. Questions for him, give a call. We've already had a couple of good ones. What about you? Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you could email the email address talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at strip cropping with native prairies, there's a lot of research going on, and one of the people involved is Tim Youngquist, an Iowa farmer, a strips farmer liaison, ag specialist in the Iowa State University Department of Agronomy. So it's great to have him with us. And again, questions, comments, I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234. On those strips, the strips themselves, they can't be just narrow. They need to be at least, 30 feet wide? Is that a good amount?
Yeah, I would say 30 feet is a great starting point. If you were to enroll them in some kind of a USDA program, what the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resource Conservation Service recommends is anywhere from 30 to 120 feet wide. So again, it kind of depends on whatever your goals are and whatever your land looks like and where, imagining the biggest cost to these is going to be the opportunity cost you lose from taking the cash crop land out of production. So being mindful, the more prairie you have, the less crop that you have. But anything less than 30, I would not suggest.
So what's the payback for a farmer? I mean, it would be might be difficult to convince a farmer. Why do I want to take 30 feet of or 100 feet of land out of production?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's a lot of what I've kind of dealt with for I've been at this job with the agronomy department for the last 12 years. So I've had a lot of experience and gone all over the Midwest. But the thing to think about is as we have these vast swaths of the upper Midwest in the corn production, not all of those acres are going to yield the same way. You know, if you thought of them as 10 by 10 grid squares and you think of each one as a franchise restaurant, since we're in Wisconsin, as a Culver's, you know, you think of there's going to be some Culver's that will make more money than others. Those that were making less money, you would probably close down and you would focus on the ones that are better. So if you can target the areas that are either lower producing, maybe particularly steep, you know, as we have large equipment, there are areas that it can be difficult to get your combine, your planter, your sprayer. You know, if your sprayer is 120 feet wide, trying to squeeze that into a little triangle can be a challenge. So being depending upon what your goals are, but trying to be mindful of where will the prairie make the most sense in an area that is either costing you money, because if you have an eroded hillside, you are spending the same amount on expensive inputs. I mean, nitrogen is very expensive, herbicide, diesel fuel, your time. And as you're going back and forth and you're planting this stuff, some of those acres are either going to be not making you very much money or actively losing you money. So we've got a lot of precision ag technology that we can target those areas and think, all right, you have some areas that are maybe showing up as red or not yielding very well on this yield map. Would it make sense to put an area like that into some tallgrass prairie? Then you get the environmental benefits that come with that. And if you enroll it into a USDA program, you're paid for putting it in and you're paid an annual rental payment every year for the land that's taken out of production.
So you're going to come out pretty well if you tie it with a government program. And those programs are not going away.
And if you're trying to plant corn into a parking lot and that corn is only growing 4 or 5 feet tall and it's not really producing much of an ear, again, you're spending the same amount on the seed that you put there as you put in the nice bottom ground with a 4 foot deep topsoil. You know, the corn belt, it's not uniform. You know, each field could be managed a little bit more delicately. And again, under my house and under your radio studio, this was prairie. You know, if you go back 200 years, just about everybody, whether it's your front yard, your backyard, your field, whatever it is, prairie was the ground cover. And I think that's one of the best things about this project is it's just so simple. You know, we're not trying to find some fantastical magic plant from somewhere else and around the world, just putting what the native ground cover was. And very quickly after you seed the prairie, you know, you start to see the grassland birds that are in steep decline. You start to see more pollinators. And you start to, you know, have more infiltration of the water. You have less soil moving around, all those things.
So, and I think farmers, for the most part, welcome wildlife and we've gotten away from wildlife habitat on farms, at least, in Iowa, Wisconsin, and some of our Midwest states where, I mean, we're planting, you know, We've done away with those fence lines and so forth that were there before.
You're exactly right. And I mean, I think that's kind of the story, really, the country over. And, you know, really a lot of this change has happened in the last 40 or 50 years, where some of those, you know, I have taken out way more fence in my life than I've ever put in. But those little strips of grass along the fence line, we're providing some cover and some habitat, and there might have been some native species and things in there. So, again, to be able to just kind of in a targeted way put some of this stuff back in, and you know, farming, boy, there's a lot of stuff that you can't control. You got markets, you got weather, you're always lifting heavy stuff. There's always stuff, things to do, but to be able to take a part of your property and have blooming flowers and grasses from April to about October, you know, and my wife can have a bouquet of cut flowers on our table basically all summer long. You know, my son, I've got three kids. My son is the oldest. He's 6 years old, and he could probably name 20 prairie plants. I didn't know any prairie plants until I was about 20. You know, there's a real quality of life that comes with this that can, from some of the sociological work we do interviewing farmers that have done the Prairie Strips Project, it very quickly becomes their favorite spot on the farm, you know, a place to go for a walk after supper. I mean, just a place to kind of enjoy nature and have a spot that you can kind of unwind, and the spring isn't quite so tightly coiled as it is in the rest of the fields.
Yeah, I would think that would be the case. So far, what's your research found in terms of improved soil and water retention? You've certainly done some research.
Yep. So, and again, encourage the listeners to go to the website, prairiestrips.org. What we found is that, again, it depends on placement, but if you can put prairie where the water is flowing through the field, imagine where it's either coming into the field or leaving, you can achieve a 95% reduction in soil erosion. So the movement of soil can be reduced, not to zero, but by taking 10% of a field and putting it into prairie, you receive disproportionate benefits. So 95% soil, wow, that's pretty staggering. And then it's about a 44% reduction in the overall amount of rainwater that's coming off of that parcel. So imagine as the rain falls, it's absorbing into last year's plant material. It's being slowed by the stiff grasses and the stiff stems of the plants. It's infiltrating down in. And then it's about an 84% reduction in the export of phosphorus and about an 90% reduction in phosphorus and an 84% reduction in nitrogen. So phosphorus and nitrogen are two of our main fertilizers that are really valuable on the farm, but quickly become a problem for anybody else as soon as they can get into a water course and start moving off the property and downstream. And then three times the abundance of pollinators and double the abundance of grassland birds. So I think, and there's more to it than that, but those are kind of the main benefits. And I think that alone shows, again, the benefits that you can get are clear, and the way that it can be applied where you can really circle on your field, where do you want this? You know, is it up around your house, your farmstead? Is it down by the creek? Is it, on a steep hillside, whatever it is, that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has made this a very flexible program, acknowledging that farmers are going to be more interested in something if they can kind of tailor it to their operation.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I'm thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking, well, they cut it 90%. And you had an area that you were losing 5 tons of topsoil per acre. Suddenly you're losing less than a ton.
Yeah, and you know, we've been doing this for 150 years. I would think that I would, you know, delusionally maybe, but I would like to think that my great-great-grandchildren would still be farming my land in 150 years or my family's land. We're going to have a difficult time producing these high-yielding crops if we don't take care of our resource base, which is that soil. So, again, just strategically looking where the water really doesn't care. The water is going to flow across your property basically in the same spot every single year. If your listeners could think about, again, where is that water leaving the field and where is it coming onto the field? And if that would be a starting point, I think that's kind of the easiest entry point. You know, don't start with 50 acres. Maybe start with 5 acres. Just start small because you have to mow it during establishment. The seed's a little bit expensive, and then there's maybe some prescribed burning or some other management that's going to have to go with that. So just kind of starting small, again, talk to your local USDA office, and they've got all the technical advice, all the resources, and then some cost share to help put this stuff in.
And on your prairiestrips.org, I think you even have some comments from farmers who have actually adopted this.
Yep, we have a lot of testimonials. And then I was actually just up in Milwaukee, probably 2 weeks ago, working with a group called the Sand County Foundation. Mm-hmm. They've been good friends to us up there, and they've done a lot of work getting prairie strips on the ground up in Wisconsin and kind of replicating some of the trials that we've done here in Iowa. Not only are there the testimonials on the website, but I'd really encourage you look for field days in your area where you could get out to maybe a neighbor's property and see, you know, what does this actually look like close to where you're farming?
Well, it sounds like a win-win to me. And I'm really glad to have you guys working on this. You've been doing it now for a while. You got some good data. You got some good papers out of it.
Yep, the data really gives us, I like prairie. I'm not going to lie about that. But to have the data to stand on, to say, hey, here's all these decimal points, here's these charts, here's these graphs from, you know, years and years of study across numerous institutions and numerous different people. And again, farmers are looking for a way to help keep their soil in place, to add some habitat, filter the water. And this is a way that you can really get at those things. And if we are going to clean up the water that's coming off of farmland, practices like prairie strips can really help, and then they can kind of just improve the overall quality of life on that farm and in the community.
Tim, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate your time very much on this. Maybe we can do this again down the road here. Tim Youngquist, Iowa farmer, a strips farmer liaison, and an ag specialist at the Iowa State University Agronomy Department. And that website is prairiestrips.org. Thanks to our team, Jeff Robbins, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, and let's see, who did I forget? Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, Jeff, and Jill.